football on off the ball.
To start with my brother from another mother, Patrick Kluivert, you had Edgar Davids, you had Frank Rijkaard, you had, and if I need to name one, Frank Rijkaard was of course the man.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Look, there is loads to talk about on today's show. We'll start a little bit with the headlines in the papers. This is the back of the Sun today. This is adding insult to injury. Brennan hits back at Burns' remarks. That's sort of the dominating story in the back of all the papers. Back at the end, though, Brennan hits back at Burns, a new twist to the sidelines saga. Then we've got insulting. Jared Brennan hits back at GAA chief Jarlath Burns. Also in the back of the papers today, of course, is the news that Katie Taylor is set to announce her fight. It's in the back of the Examiner here. Taylor Croker fight edges closer. So news came out yesterday, pictures from Eddie Hearn, with Katie Taylor. They're going to have a press conference tomorrow in Jones's Road.
Yep.
And that can only mean one thing, Matthew. That means that Katie Taylor's going to be fighting in Croke Park this year.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. It is pretty amazing. Like, I had a feeling this was going to happen based off a couple of different things. Eddie Hearn was speaking last week at one of the Matchroom events and said there was going to be a big announcement next Friday. But these promoters are good at, you know, making announcements about announcements about announcements, and they never really kind of deliver. So there was a bit of kind of concern about whether it might be something to do with one of these 5v5 sort of things they've done before with Matchroom, where Eddie Hearn will throw five fighters out and from Matchroom, and Eddie Hearn or Frank Warren will throw five out from Queensbury and they'll go head to head, which has happened before, and we thought that might happen again. But obviously they won't be announcing something like that at Croke Park. I think we're pretty set for it to be Katie Taylor. I had been over interviewing a few boxers at the Gibson across the Tree Arena the other day. A few Irish boxers ahead of Pearse O'Leary's card on the 1st of August, the one that Tyson Fury has said he's going to be on, but we don't actually know if he's going to be on it or not yet. So if he does get announced for that, I'm sure Queens will be back over. But the vibe I was getting from around the place, I suppose, that day was that there was something cooking as far as Katie Taylor and Croke Park. A few of the fighters had been in and around Croke Park that day, that morning, for one reason or another, and kind of played it off as that's a great place, you know. Just wanted to go over and have a look, and I kind of thought, convenient.
Something's happening,
and something was happening, something is happening, and it's great that it is happening. And look, there's a lot of talk to be had between now and then, I suppose, about what it's actually going to look like, who's going to be on the undercard, because the guys I was talking to, I had anticipated them sort of being the guys who would make up the rest of the card, likes of Pearse O'Leary, Adam O'Lanyan, Bobby Flood, Stephen Cairns, amongst others, of course, Thomas Carty as well, brings a pretty big following with him. But the problem you're going to have is that Queensbury card is on the 1st of August, and this Katie Taylor card is supposedly being reportedly going to be on the 5th of September.
Yeah.
So it's not that much of a gap in between. Now, that'll be fine for the younger guys, the likes of Alanyan and Flood, who are trying to have five or six fights, of course, across 2026, and they'd be able to fight kind of 5 weeks apart. But for someone like Pearse O'Leary, who's at a stage of his career now where every fight is incredibly important, and every fight's always important for sure, but with where he's at now, he's going to be looking at opponents that he's going to need more than 4 weeks of preparation for. And he's fighting a guy in August who he's not going to want to take his eye off the ball for ahead of a card in September. Of course, those fighters are signed up with Queensbury, with Katie Taylor's promotion, obviously, which is Matchroom under Eddie Hearn. So there's that kind of caveat as well. But Ticket Prices, her opponent, who's that going to be? It's looking like it's going to be Flora Peely from France, who I wouldn't know a whole lot about myself. She's 12-0, but she's not going to sell tickets in the same way someone like Chantel Cameron might have done, or Amanda Serrano might have done. But regardless of all that stuff, we've plenty of time to get into that. It is just great that all her persistence has paid off.
Yeah.
And someone has bent the knee a little bit in terms of putting money up for it or lowering the price, you know.
It does sound like Eddie Hearn has done that by the sounds of it. And it looks like it's because Katie Taylor has basically confirmed this will definitely be her last fight. So we'll be chatting a little bit more in detail about this at around 10 to 8 or so. Lee Costlow from the Belfast Telegraph will join us here on the papers. But we do want to talk about this Jared Brennan story, because it is a new twist in the saga as it's described in the back of the paper. So people have been following this story for the last couple of weeks, obviously. Jared Brennan released a statement last night through his solicitor hitting back at Jarlath Burns and basically describing it as insulting the way that Burns has been talking about him, and said, "My client considers the description of irrational in respect to comparisons with his case and another incident in another game as insulting to those holding that widely held view." So he's obviously talking about the Jim McGuinness incident there. "Moreover, he is further concerned that the Uachtaráin stated that it's more embarrassing for the CCC to lose a case brought by it by a hearing, appeal or DRA." So what he is referencing here is actually Jarlath Burns, who was talking on Morning Ireland earlier this week about this. But he also spoke to Tommy Rooney about this on Tuesday morning. So if for context of what Jarlath Burns' solicitor is saying here, here is a little bit of what Jarlath Burns was saying to Tommy on Tuesday.
"There's a number of things that the CCC have to consider whenever they sit down to adjudicate on a referee's report. What has the referee said? What is the referee proposing? The Gerbrennan case was very simple, very straightforward. He was cited for the minimum contact with an opponent. There's the sanction. That went through hearings, appeals, DRA. So it was a very robust process. And we know, one of you have said it to me before, that the GAA rules, if anything, are fair. They are fair. And if Dublin want to change that, they can change it in a motion to Congress to maybe lessen it. The difficulty was, because it came in the very last game of the league, people feel it was very disproportionate because Ger missed out 12 weeks, not only in his county, but he also takes under 10 in his club. He wasn't able to attend matches, wasn't able to attend training. Took a lot, shipped a lot of abuse on social media for it. Totally unfair, which I would utterly condemn. Ger Brennan's a good person and didn't deserve any of that. None of that would have garnered any more talk until what happened in Killarney. Now, the referee took a different view on that, and whenever our CCC meet, they have to then say, whatever sanction we impose, let's say retrospectively, if the referee has decided not to act upon it, will that pass a hearings, an appeal and a DRA? They have to be cognizant of that, because there's nothing more embarrassing than something done in good faith at CCC and then losing it at hearings, which is why in Donegal, you know, that motion that with the spurious reasons given that can actually increase the suspension, that has helped hearings committees all around the place. So referee took a different opinion on it, and you have to remember the referee was in the middle of that. The fourth official saw it as well. The referee referred to it in his report and left it at that. If the Gerbrennan event hadn't happened, nobody would have been focusing on that. But I heard people saying the GAA painted ourselves into a corner. No, we didn't. We apply the rules. That's all we do. We just apply the rules. If people want to change the rules.
Yeah, that was Jarlath Burns speaking to the media on Tuesday about the Gerbrennan case and Gerbrennan heading out last night through his solicitor. He also went on to talk about the CCCC saying that natural justice, of course, dictates that justice ought to be done and no CCCC should ever be embarrassed at an infraction brought but not being proven. So sort of hitting back at what Jarlath Burns is saying there and saying,
yeah,
you shouldn't not bring an infraction to the CCC in case you've got the decision wrong, which, I mean, I'm inclined to agree with.
Yeah, I thought my biggest takeaway from it was the embarrassment stuff. I think that's crazy. That's crazy. To not do something because of the potential that you get it wrong and therefore a couple of people are embarrassed. I know that's not the total on 100% complete logic as to why this didn't happen. Obviously, the referee's report and all that sort of thing too. But the fact that he cited it means it's there and it's significant and it's one of the reasons why this has gone the way it's gone is mental. I think that's mad.
Yeah. I didn't like the comments on Morning Ireland on Monday either, or on the Tuesday, around it being irrational to compare the two incidents. I think it's very comparable.
They're
extremely
the
comparable.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're being compared is because they are comparable, if that makes sense. Like, yeah, they're being brought into the same bracket because they were very similar. And yeah,
they're not the exact same, obviously, but nothing's ever going to be the exact same. You know, it's like,
I don't know. I understand why Ger Brennan would be upset by some of the things he's heard come out of Jarlath Burns' mouth over the last couple of days. And my one thing while I was reading the statement via his solicitor was thinking, you know, maybe you should just keep your mouth shut here because they've given you a fixture on the Sunday. You'll be back for the Cavan game on Sunday week. They might just move it back to Sunday if you don't keep in line.
I assume he's speaking through a solicitor because he's still suspended.
Hard to know. I suppose he's not involved in any media duties, it's the only way he can.
Yeah,
unless he comes out separately and does it.
And I can understand the angst that's there. And to be fair, from a Dublin point of view, in a weird way, the easy thing to do would be to say nothing. because when you do come out and talk like this, it does seem like sour grapes. It's that things aren't going our way. We've lost the Louth. We've lost the Westmeath. We're having a bad year. So it's easy for us now that we've got confirmation that things aren't going well, when that would have been suspected previous, for us now to just say nothing. Whereas they have come out and they fought their corner a bit. And maybe, look, you know, might be the worst thing in the world for Dublin people to start feeling like the world is against them, because people clearly aren't buying into what's going on in Dublin at the minute as far as attendances go. And if a bit of rousing from the manager, which is Ger Brennan, of course, it's easy to forget that, to get people out and behind the team and say, look, we need you now because no one else is with us, I can see how that might benefit them. Yeah. But it'll be interesting to see how it develops. We're going to rumble on for a little while. Like, Ger Brennan is going to be sitting in front of the media at some point over the next little while. I also was reading something as well. Now, I don't know if this is actually 100% accurate, but I think it is. He's going to be suspended for a couple of league games at the start of next season as well. So there's a 12-week suspension that carries across into the Championship, which is what he's serving now. But because it happened in the league, he has to miss a couple of them games as well the start of next year.
I have to check that.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that is... pretty sure that is the way it works. I think I was reading that on Twitter last night. It's an absolutely outrageous suspension. It is outrageous, regardless of if that league thing is true, and I think it is.
Yeah. He says in his statement that a 4-week, one game ban would have.
It has to be game bans. We talked about this. The ban has to be changed to cover a couple of games as opposed to a period of time.
I do think Gareth Burns references this in the full interview, but he says that if you want to change the rule, bring a motion to Congress. So,
yeah.
But look, that's the only way you can get this change. And I will say it is probably likely that they're going to bring this motion to Congress and add in a little bit of change there with maybe a stepping stone ban with a 4-week ban, maybe an 8-week ban, and a 12-week ban based on how bad the action was.
For the BBC, following a 12-week draconian ban wherein my client will have been suspended for either 4.5 or 5.5 games, depending on when CCC schedules Dublin's next game.
Oh, so it's...
And then he says, Mr. Brennan remains further suspended for 30% of the National Football League in 2027.
Mm.
So, two or three games. That's wild.
That's bizarre,
yeah. He's going to be back managing a couple of games and then he's to go again. So when he gets suspended for the games, is he just suspended, he can't be on the sideline? Or is he to sit out for the first 3 weeks of the National League? If it's the same as what it is now, he has to drop his kids at the gate again.
Assuming he is the Dublin boss for the National League next year as well.
He will be. He'll have to be. He hasn't even had a chance this year.
Like you said, he has a chance now to, like you say, create that siege mentality and get people behind him. And I think that's part of what they've done here with the statement. I think there is a little bit of hitting out the GA and... you know, voicing his own concerns, but there is a little bit of, look what they're doing to us. They don't care about us anymore. Yeah.
It's actually a good point. Ronan here in the comments says that, do you think Ger Brennan actually had zero contact with the staff, etc.? Is there a workaround with that? Because surely his first action can't be the day of the Cavan game. He just rocks back into the dressing room. We can, of course, only speculate, but it's still, it's an interesting point.
Yeah, well, he can't even... He's involved with the under-10s.
Yeah,
he can't even drop his kids after that. So, you know, that's...
Well, he can drop them off, but he can't drive inside the gate.
Yeah,
but that's why it has to be a games thing, because with the way it's worked, the fact that if the game was on a Saturday, he wouldn't be able to be involved. Anyway, it's mad. This thing has gone on for so long, but...
Yeah,
and it's going to keep rumbling on. Off the Ball Breakfast here. It's 7:45 in the morning. Let us know what you think on the Ger Brennan case, on the Katie Taylor fight in Croke Park. Text us on 087-9180-180. Leave a comment on YouTube, or you can email us as well. We do want to talk about those fixtures because they were announced yesterday.
Yeah,
came through. Ger Brennan will be allowed on the touchline, as you said, because Dublin's game against Cavan has been scheduled for 2 p.m. on the Sunday. Saturday, June 13th, we've got Donegal against Cork in McCool Park, Monaghan against Roscommon in St. Tiernas Park at 4:30, Kildare against Kerry, we've got Derry against Meath in Celtic Park, and then on the Sunday we've got Louth versus Armagh, we've got Galway against Westmeath, Tyrone Mayo and Cavan Dublin. But the big story here is that the Donegal against Cork, Kildare, Kerry and Cavan Dublin games will not be televised. So the rest of the games will be televised across RTE and GAA+. Mm. But three of the key games are not going to be broadcast at all for these round 2A and 2B fixtures.
That's a disgrace.
Look, listen.
I'd be keen now. We've got a Cavan man and a Donegal man.
Well,
I'm sitting pretty because I'm actually away that weekend. So I need GAA Plus on this occasion.
Well,
so
you have the feed up. You don't really don't even need to watch the
I'll be watching.
Suppose being cynical about it, looking at those fixtures.
Yeah.
One might look at these fixtures and say, the common theme here is that there's one strong favourite going into all three of those games. And potentially that's why they're not being broadcast.
Yeah, plainly.
I think that's exactly what's just happened.
I also would say that there is probably... So they obviously have to broadcast a certain amount of games on a Saturday, a certain amount of games on a Sunday. GAA Plus takes some of them, RTE takes some of them. I think the Galway Westmeath game would have to have been on the Sunday with their soccer on as well and that sort of thing. So there's reasons why the games are on certain days. Yeah. And that would obviously have an influence on which games they televise, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but on the face of it, yeah, you're right. The strong favourites, they want to have the most competitive games, if you like. But at the same time, you could have Dublin exiting the championship at the hands of Cavan, realistically.
You've got Ger Brennan's return.
You've got the All-Ireland champions. I know Stephen Doyle was making this point last night in Kerry, who are playing knockout championship football. Regardless of who they're playing, they're playing knockout championship football away from home, and they could be gone. Now, however unlikely that is, they could be, and nobody's going to get to see it. And then you've also got the other point too with the Cork Donegal game. In that, Cork have got to travel the length and breadth of the country, Cork fans, to get up to that game at 2 o'clock. Is it 1 or 2 o'clock on a Saturday?
It's 3 o'clock on
3 o'clock
Saturday.
Yeah. Park, so, yeah. Like, what time are you leaving the house to get to that, and you're not going to be able to watch it? So, I don't know. It's never going to be perfect. Of course, it's never going to be perfect. And no matter what happens with this conversation every year, you could actually probably record this chat we're having right now 6 months ago and then play it out because if we knew the draw. Look, because you always have the same issue. But
yeah, we were talking about the fact that some of the 2A games, you know, you don't think any team will be going in with the mindset of, oh, there's a free hit, we can lose this game. But there is an element going into the broadcast of this that the 2B games are the most important games here because whoever loses is out of the championship. So it's outrageous to me to think that Dublin could potentially exit this championship and it not be televised. Likewise with Donegal against Cork, you've got, you know, that's a 2A game, sorry, but Donegal against Cork, we've got the All-Ireland favourites playing against a side that can run them fairly close. And then in 2B, Kildare against Kerry, the All-Ireland winners, potentially knocked out of the championship and we're not going to get to see it. But it's also insulting to the likes of Cork and Kildare and Cavan to assume that just because they're not strong favourites going into the game that this game shouldn't be televised and their fans shouldn't get the opportunity to watch it. Is this not the point of GAA Plus?
I was going to say, this is exactly the reason I would have thought that GAA Plus is now a thing and is, you know, people are paying 90 odd quid or whatever it is for the season. And you're not seeing 3/8 of this round of the All-Ireland Championship. And it's like you said, three teams are going to go out and we're not going to see it. It's bizarre.
Well, yeah, two of them, I suppose, yeah. Two of them are going to be out for good.
Sorry, so two of them are out.
Points to the stand,
It is absolutely absurd. That I think it is the thing of, there are probably the three games out there that you would look at and say, I probably know what's going to happen there.
Yeah.
But that's not fair.
No.
Like, the way football is nowadays, it's so unpredictable. Like, who would have predicted the start of the season that Westmeath would be where they are? Division 3 team. You might have. But absolutely no one else in the country would have. Do you know what I mean? So, like, anything could happen in these games. Kildare could be Kerry. They probably won't, but they could. And then we won't know.
I would think that maybe one of the reasons why the Kildare-Kerry game in particular, because it's quite a distance, to be fair, not quite Cork Donegal, but it might encourage more people to go as part of the logic that they might come to us with and say, this is why we've done it. Out of interest, would either of you be more inclined, would you be more inclined to go up to Donegal and watch the game against Cork, and would you be more inclined to head home to Cavan and watch the game against Dublin because it's not on telly, or would that have any impact on your decision to do it or not?
Now that it's not on TV, there would definitely be a push to get home for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's not really...
That's not the point.
It's kind of irrelevant.
Aside to the point, because some people won't be able to go to the game.
Yeah.
Like, inevitably, like, McCool Park, K- can only hold a certain capacity. So
yeah,
you're thinking how many thousands of people are going to want to watch that game and won't be able to watch it.
Yeah, I suppose that's sort of the logic we put in Louden Armagh on television, though, is because it's being played in Inishkeen, which will only hold a couple of thousand people. And how many season ticket holders do Armagh have? So they've catered to them, I suppose, in that way, by putting that game on television. And that would probably fall into that category of Armagh are probably going to win, but Loud could give them a run, you know, that kind of way. So that's probably one of them. We would probably be having the same conversation if they were showing Dublin Cavan instead of Loud and Armagh. So you're never going to get it perfect, but at the same time, I think there's obvious reasons as to why a lot of these games that aren't being shown should be shown. Yeah,
yeah, and they're going to have seven or eight different pundits at each game. It's like, could have spread them out a little bit, you know?
We're getting to the point, I think, I'd be very shocked, and I know they've got a new broadcast deal, however long that lasts. Surely we're getting to the point where they just bite the bullet and be like, we're showing every game. Not this year. Like, you're getting, especially at this stage of the season, where you've got knockout championship football, there's a realistic kind of expectation that we're going to be able to watch this. And we're not.
Yeah.
And it applies to the hurling as well too. Like, I mean, there's so many, so far fewer games in hurling yet at certain parts of the Leinster Championship and the Munster Championship. There's games that you're not able to watch. Mm. So
Lee Costello from the Belfast Telegraph is on the line with us now. Lee, how are you getting on? Good morning.
Hey, Andy. All good. How are you?
Not too bad. So we are going to talk about Katie Taylor in a second, but I know you're big into your guy as well. So where do you stand on the games being televised versus not being televised?
They're televising the Tyrone game, so from a bias point of view, I'm totally okay with it. Being a sports journalist, I have to go to the matches. You know, I'll be in Derry on Saturday and I'll be in Tyrone on the Sunday. So I'm actually extra disappointed then that other games aren't on television, because you get there early, you usually open GA Plus or RTA Player or something like that, and you know, you watch the games and it gives you some talking points and some grounding and some context going into the other matches to see what the lay of the land is. So it is really disappointing. Yeah, I think we are etching towards a world where all games are going to be televised.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's what the point of GA Plus was in the first place, that the games that weren't going to be televised are going to be picked up in some way, shape or form, whether that's a one camera operation system or not, the people will be able to watch them. And it's sort of veered away from that into a massive broadcast system with 10 pundits at each game and a pre-show. But you're not here to talk to us about the GA, you're here to talk about Katie Taylor, who, it has not officially been announced yet, but it looks like it's going to be announced tomorrow that Katie Taylor is finally getting that dream fight in Croke Park to end her career. What's your initial reaction to that news? Sort of came out of the blue, but was in the background, seemed to be always going to be, we'll try get this over the line as quickly as we can. And it seems that they finally just bit the bullet. Eddie Hearn's going to swallow up a little bit of cash here.
Well, that's exactly it. There certainly seemed to be an element of inevitability about it this time that wasn't there in previous times. Katie always had so many options, whether it was fighting in Vegas, Madison Square Garden, all over the world. But Croke Park was always on the list, top of the list, and it was something that they were always going to do eventually, and it was something they always talked about doing, in the sense that wouldn't it be great to end her career there? And there's been a real finality about this time around, in the sense that it is her swan song, this is her last dance as such. In fact, to the point where if it's not Croke Park, then she probably is just retired already. So this is Eddie Hearn's last chance to sort of cash in a little. But I also do believe that he's sentimental to a certain degree, and he wants to be the person to say that he brought Katie Taylor Croke Park, or he brought Croke Park Katie Taylor. So he definitely put his hands in his pockets, I think, this time, and did everything he could to get it over the line.
Yeah, a little bit of legacy building here, I think, from Eddie Hearn, which is fair enough. If that's what gets this fight over the line, I'm happy enough for Eddie Hearn to take a little bit of credit here. But
yeah, for sure. When
do we think this fight's going to be, Lee? Because there's concerts on in August. The proposed date originally was around the 5th of September. Is that what we're looking at here, do you think?
Yeah, it's looking to be the 5th of September, and I knew it was going to be the 5th of September before, years ago, because I knew that I was going to go to Canada on the 3rd of September, so of course it was going to be in and around there. We're going over to see the sister-in-law on the 3rd, but I'm going to have to extend that visit, I think, or go out a little bit later. But yes, the 5th of September seems to be the date that's set in stone.
Yeah, it was isn't it? Gavin Casey was talking about that last night as well, and that he has a wedding, and he is his brother or something, or his mate,
his
maybe
good
or something.
Friend, yeah.
The friend is getting married, and he's told him he's not going to make it, and the friend might not make the wedding either. But yeah, people are going to be throwing off their plans, I think, for this one. Just as far as the card itself goes, there is the aspect of this being an 82,500 seater with probably a few more. I'm not sure exactly how they worked out with the hill and all that sort of stuff. And then obviously you've got the pitch, which we have to factor in. With a concert, you can get a few people out on the pitch. I imagine they'll do the same thing. There's going to be a lot going to have to go into this as far as marketing goes, not to take away from the kind of allure that Katie Taylor's final fight will have for so many people who don't even care about boxing. But it's going to be a challenge to sell the thing out. They're going to have to get the undercard right. They're also going to have to get the opponent right to a degree. And I've seen, obviously, some rumours about who that might be. What are you thinking on that front? What sort of undercard are we looking at? How likely is it to sell out? And I suppose opponent-wise, where are we on that?
Well, it looks like the opponent's going to be Flora Pelé, a French fighter, undefeated. Not well known, I suppose, but she is the WBC mandatory, so she's an established fighter. She's got herself into that standing, albeit because Sandy Ryan could no longer fight. She was the original mandatory position. I'm not actually too obsessed with Katie Taylor's opponent because in many ways, you know, she's already retired. She's done so much in her career. She's gone above and beyond. She's probably stretched it out even longer than she should have in terms of her own health. This is meant to be a swan song. It's meant to be a celebration of Katie Taylor's career, a chance for everyone at home to see her in an unbelievable venue and literally follow in the steps of Muhammad Ali, who fought there in 1972. And we haven't had a real boxing show there since. The undercard, however, I do think has to be immaculate. I think it has to be top drawer. And just being a boxing journalist, you know, when you're talking to a lot of fighters off the record and who's maybe getting involved and some phone calls that are happening, some that aren't happening, which is maybe more concerning. I am genuinely concerned that the undercard won't be as strong as it can be, because the biggest name in Dublin boxing at the minute in terms of up and coming is Piers O'Leary, but he's fighting in August, so yeah, that rules him out. And then strangely, he actually has Tyson Fury set to fight on his undercard in like a co-main event kind of thing. And you're thinking, if Tyson Fury was available, it doesn't really matter who he's fighting. Putting him on a card like Croke Park would be absolutely enormous. Although the problem with there is that both them fighters are Frank Warren fighters. This is an Eddie Hearn show, so there's always going to be complications there. Although they have shown that they can work together in recent years. You've got Lewis Crocker fought Paddy Donovan last year in the first ever All-Irish world title fight at Windsor Park. But as much as that looks like it's going to happen again, if Lewis Crocker beats Liam Parro, apparently September's coming around too soon for the ABF and things to get that sorted. There isn't a lot of confidence, I'm hearing, you know, that'll be the chief support or even on the card entirely. And then I'm looking around for maybe other potential Irish world champions. So you've got Anto Kikachi, but the WBA have just ordered that he has to fight a mandatory before July 14th. So that might rule him out. And again, another Frank Warren fighter. So all of the biggest Irish names that I can think of, and there needs to be a level of locality to this as well, because it's a celebration of Katie Taylor, a celebration of Irish boxing. They're sort of all ruled out, and it does just make me a little bit worried that the undercard won't be what it should be.
Well, is it going to be, there's an argument to be made here that this is more of a cultural event than a boxing event, and that what will get up bums on seats will not necessarily be the most exciting fights with the best fighters. It'll be the most popular fighters. It'll potentially bring a crowd. Maybe Thomas Cardy will bring in some of the Dublin crowd.
Absolutely.
Maybe Callum Walsh, could he get a fight here? And then, like, this is a absolutely outrageous outside shout, but what's the chances Mick Conlon comes out of retirement here to get a swan song in Croke Park? He only retired just a couple of months ago,
and he had spoken openly about wanting to do that before kind of everything went against him he lost his last fight. And you're right, I think Pierce O'Leary, I was actually chatting to Pierce the other day there at the launch of the press conference for his fight in August. I think that's a huge miss if there is no way that they can make that happen. And I suppose for some of the younger guys on the card, the younger Irish guys that are going to be fighting on that card as well, there is probably a world in which they can have a 4-week turnaround and get on and make that work. But for someone like Pierce O'Leary, that just doesn't seem like it's going to happen. And when you talk about getting bums on seats and having the most popular fighters, like, he would bring thousands of people to that, so he is a huge loss. But it's an interesting point you make, the Mick Conlon one. I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him rock up on that card in some way, shape or form.
Any chances, Lee?
of Mick Conlon coming out of retirement? Potentially, yeah. A bit funny, I was at his last fight at the SSE Arena. I was covering it, and I thought that the undercard really let him down in terms of the event, and they made a big, big mistake in the sense that they only had two Belfast fighters, and Belfast is brimming with fighters. You know, so many Belfast fighters can, if you put on three or four good ones, they'll sell out that SSE arena, no problem. But they only had two, and they were on the undercard, you know, really early in the night. Yeah, didn't make the TV slots or anything like that. Then it was just sort of all, English people and stuff like that. And then they were wondering why it didn't sell out. So I do think you need to celebrate the locality of it all. You want to give this is an opportunity to celebrate Irish boxing. Mick Conlon definitely falls into that category. Any strong undercard, you'd like to think, potentially a debut of someone with a lot of potential, a prodigy, someone who's maybe just turned pro or very, very early in their stages. They come on early in the fight. Then you'd like some sort of a domestic dust-up, maybe a Celtic title on the line, or even just, two dubs who hate each other. We all love that. I'm thinking like Declan Garrity, John O'Carroll and stuff. I remember their fight a few years ago. Yeah. There was a little bit of needle and there was a lot of interest in it. And then you want to start up in the levels. Yeah, maybe a Commonwealth title belt, an IBO world title, a European belt, something with a bit of credibility just to the name, because Katie Taylor's always going to sell out a fair bit of this just because of who she is and because everyone knows this is their last chance to see her in the flesh. But the undercard is certainly a concern. I'd be very interested to see who they've got.
We'll find out half of it tomorrow, I would imagine.
We'll hear something anyway. Yeah.
Lee, thanks very much.
Thank you, lads.
Lee Costlow there from the Belfast Telegraph. A reminder that Off the Ball Breakfast is with Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage of 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. So, I mean, let us know in the comments who you want to see at this fight. Yeah. Do we want to see a huge cultural thing as well? Do we want to see Irish bands playing? Do we want entertainment beforehand? Like, this needs to be made into the significant moment that it is.
Yeah.
And added to that, stadium fights are usually a terrible spectacle for most fans. So you need to put on a show that's going to go beyond the fight itself.
Yeah, 100%. And it's unprecedented in the sense that they can make this whatever they want it to be. A lot of these cards, usually when Katie Taylor's fought before in the Tree Arena and all that, they've flooded with Irish fighters, and the fights aren't always spectacular, but these, and it's kind of its own little, it's bubble Irish boxing, I suppose. Like, there's a lot of these people who the mainstream kind of sporting fan may not have heard of, but do have these kind of cult followings, and they do tend to kind of fill out the place. There are a lot of those fighters as well. The ones that come to mind, obviously people know Callum Walsh, they know Pierce O'Leary, they know a couple of others, of course, but there's others there like Anto Kakachi. He's becoming more into the mainstream now, but there's Cuivi Najarko as well up from Belfast. There's just the Sean McComb. There's a lot of these lads that I imagine will be on this card, but you're going to need some star power there as well. You are, like, there's talks of Vasily Lomachenko coming out of retirement too. If you could get someone like him on against an Irish fighter, you play into it, have an Irish guy fighting an English guy, that'll make people want to watch it. Avoid kind of the, usually with these cards, what they tend to do is, especially Matchroom in Queensbury, they'll throw one of their English prospects in somewhere on the main card, and it saps the energy out of place. And sometimes that's a good thing, because people get really up, really high, and then it's like, okay, I can go and I can relax for a while, and then the co-main event will come out, and this is huge. I'd be very intrigued to see what they do, but as Lee alluded to there, we'll be slightly concerned about where they go with the undercard. But if they could figure out a way to maybe negate, if they can't get the lack of, if they can't get the star power that's kind of required for something like this, I wonder if there's a way they can negate it with something like a show of a band or something like that. This is going to be one of the biggest nights in the history of Irish sport, let alone Irish boxing. So they need to make this. They need to do it justice.
I'd nearly be reluctant to talk too much about, having to sell tickets and the undercard and things like that, because I don't want to take away from the event and what it is. Like, the whole thing is so emblematic of Katie Taylor's life and career, and that nothing has come easy for her. Like, you think about, her fighting for boxing to become a women's sport in the Olympics. It's the same thing with Croke Park, that it's taken over four years to even get to the point where there's a press conference happening this week to announce it. So I think the more we almost talk about being concerned about tickets not selling, that that becomes more of an issue then. I think if it, if they just sell it right, and that, you know, it all, obviously is all about Cady, then I think they'll sell a good few tickets. But obviously the undercard matters. But
that is the thing though, but the last thing, I think I would actually say on the other side of that, I think it's arguably more important to talk about that sort of stuff, because the last thing you want is this not to be what it can be.
Yeah, well, there's a comment in on YouTube saying, folks, 35,000 tops, will non-boxing fans really go? Nope. I would actually strongly disagree. No, I think everybody and their dog is going to be wanting a ticket to this, whether they like boxing or not. Coldplay sold out how many nights in Croke Park? We've got the Weeknd selling out across the week, across the summer as well. Like, there's going to be a moment here where this is going to be, I guarantee you, there will be almost outrage at the amount of people who got tickets for this ahead of other people, the likes of the influencers who get tickets for these on press drops.
Yeah.
And likewise, like that. There will be.
Once they
everybody
get
who's interested
right.
in boxing will want to go to this fight.
Yeah.
And people who are interested in Cady Taylor, who has been, for the last, I think, 15 years almost in a row, been voted the most popular Irish sports person, I don't think they're going to have any trouble selling this out.
Once they get the price right.
Yeah.
Once they get boxing tickets,
I think that's the more
cheap.
Important thing. Yeah, it's the tickets. Yeah.
They have to
agree.
Get the price right.
Yeah, I agree. As long as it's promoted well, price is right in the tickets, I think they should be able to sell this out without an amazing undercard.
Some more stories in the back of today's paper. So this is the back of the Daily Mail. Amber Barrett with Sonia O'Sullivan. Any chance of a photo there, Amber? So they're down training in Cork ahead of their game against Netherlands tomorrow night. We'll be chatting about that in a little bit more detail. In the back of the Times, this is an interesting one. So they've obviously got a picture here with Sabalenka, who exited the French Open yesterday. I just want to quit tennis now. So quite a number of high-profile players have been knocked out ahead of the quarterfinals in the French Open. The heat has been exhausting out there, so I think that's been sort of cited as one of the reasons. But it also in the back of the Times, it says FIFA accused of collusion over tickets. So that's a story about Martin Ziegler. He actually goes into a little bit of detail about how there seems to be a swath of tickets going up on resale sites for cheaper than they're available on the FIFA sites, and there's some rumours that there's been collusion with FIFA to get those tickets because they can't reduce the price of the tickets on the FIFA website, because then people who actually bought them on the FIFA website will go mad. But the tickets are available for around $200, which is a cut price on the $700 they're going for on FIFA's own website. So that story is going to develop over the next couple of days, I'd say, ahead of the World Cup. And another story that's broken on the World Cup today is that FIFA have changed their rules so that they won't, fans will not be allowed to bring bottles of water into the stadiums in the USA. So that's in the Athletic today.
I haven't heard a positive story about FIFA in decades. Like, just continuously make terrible decisions.
Yeah, so look, I mean, not allowing fans to bring bottles of water into the stadiums when we know the heat is going to be in like very, very high in the US. The humidity is going to be even higher.
Yeah.
So forcing fans to fork out a load of money on tickets and then a load of money on water is not a good look on FIFA. Another story that has been appearing is actually this Ibrahim Kanate story, which broke yesterday. Kanate speaks out on struggles in a year of personal tragedy. So this was an interview that Ibrahim Kanate did on French radio, where he talks about the season as a whole, and some really powerful stuff in it. So Kanate essentially admits to having depression across the season, saying, you know, there are low points, there's depression, you can suffer from depression in football too. There's no need to be ashamed to say so. It's true that I've often heard players say that they're suffering from depression, and fans or people outside don't understand because they're earning a lot of money, but that's rubbish and you shouldn't say that. Depression is personal. It's deep inside you. When you're depressed, it starts in your heart and goes up to your brain and takes over your body. He goes on to talk about the impact of the death of Diogo Jota, how he was depressed across the season, and multiple Liverpool players seem to be in a similar position, and that really impacting the performance. And look, we've spoken about this before, but it does seem from that interview from Kanate that like this Jota incident impacted them far beyond what we'll ever understand.
Yeah, and to be fair, I think as a wider public, people have been good at acknowledging and not forgetting that that did happen. Every conversation around Liverpool's struggles and around Slot maybe not getting the best out of them this season has been met with the caveat of, we're not going to know the effects of this Jota thing until we know the effects of this Jota thing and we hear players start speaking about it. Canada is not the first of which, obviously we've heard Andy Robertson, the first thing he referenced when Scotland qualified for the World Cup was the Diogo Jota stuff. He's spoken about it a little bit more over the last couple of weeks as well, but maybe not to such a detailed degree as Canade has, and how it personally affected him. And like, to be fair, a lot of Liverpool players we have noticed a drop off in. Canade probably the most significant, I would suggest. I mean, at the end of last season he was being heavily linked with Real Madrid, and it was like, yeah, that makes sense, of course, that works when his contract runs out. And then throughout the season you're going, this guy is nowhere near able to play for Real Madrid. But obviously with the caveat of everything that was going on, he did lose his father as well during the season, which of course is a horrible thing to have to go through at any period, let alone when you've lost one of your teammates. We don't know how close all these guys are. He's obviously going to sign for Real Madrid now, so it looks that way anyway, and that is a good thing. But I don't think he'd be the last of those Liverpool players to come out and talk about this situation in that way. And I think it's another one of the reasons why, look, Arne Slot is the manager of Liverpool. You have to take everything that comes into that. Most managers will go through their career without having to deal with a tragedy such as that. So you do have to have sympathy for him as far as the fact that they struggled this season. And it is refreshing, I suppose, in a sense, to hear a footballer like Ibu Konate to come out and speak so openly. And also refreshing to not have people turn around and go, oh, that's convenient, you had a terrible season. Of course you're going to blame it on something other than yourself. So at least people are taking it for what it is. And wish him all the best. Hopefully he goes and has a great time at Real Madrid. And all the Liverpool players, regardless of what you're thinking, I wouldn't be the big fan of Liverpool, but obviously a horrible situation to have to deal with.
For sure. Another story we want to talk about, and I'm interested to hear what people have to say about this in the comments, but the panels for the World Cup have been confirmed across the board. So on RT we've got James McLean, Shea Given, Ronnie Whelan, Ray Houghton, Didi Hamann, Anya O'Gorman, Kenny Cunningham, Stephen Kelly, Keith Tracy, Richie Sadler, Alan Cawley, Kevin Doyle and Niamh Fahey. That's a pretty good lineup for RT. But ITV really kick it up a notch for the World Cup. We've got Roy Keane, Ian Wright, Gary Neville, Patrick Vieira, Karen Carney, Ange Postecoglou, Juan Mata, Emma Hayes, Duncan Ferguson, looking forward to that one, and Bradley White-Phillips, as well as Joby McEnough, is the punditry.
Joby McEnough got called up. Wow.
Yeah.
Good EFL man.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I didn't catch that one. I caught the rest of them. Joby McEnough, that's amazing. I don't know why I'm getting excited.
There's some high profile names there, I think. Yeah. That's I'm looking forward to watching some of those. The BBC one is
Cold.
Like BBC that. One is also great. So they've got the usual, you know, their presenter list is Kelly Cates, Mark Chapman, Gabby Logan, Alex Scott. So I think they trump ITV here. They've got Micah Richards, Joe Hart, Wayne Rooney, but my favourite of all them, Olivier Giroud.
Yeah.
On the BBC.
You'd tune in just for him, wouldn't you?
You would. You'd tune in just to look at him.
Yeah. Sorry, that's what I mean.
I think I'm having the ITV one slightly more just because there's a few more unknown quantities there.
Who's Javier Hernandez?
I know what I'm getting.
Javier Hernandez is with the Fox.
Oh, he's an American.
He's okay. The American broadcasting. Yeah. BBC also have the likes of Benny McCarthy, Ashley Williams, Alan Shearer, obviously, amongst others, with Scott Brown, obviously the Scottish representative.
You need something slightly eclectic with it, don't you? You need something a bit rogue. I think there's a massive like, what is Damien Duff doing for the summer? Why are we not going to get to hear from him? That would have been amazing, at least to some degree. He would have added a bit of high profile nature to the RT one.
RT had the opportunity to build on what people have been saying Premier Sports have built, in that the Shea Given, Kenny Cunningham and Damien Duff is the new Eamon Dunphy, John Giles and Liam Brady. So they could have actually had that and then potentially brought Apri Match back and recreated that with the new pundits. Kenny Cunningham is obviously...
He's using the old one as well,
That's fantastic.
Cross-generation.
I suppose it's difficult to know because Ireland aren't at the World Cup. I think it comes down to a financial thing of like, how much money are we going to put into pundits here? Because... Anyway, that's probably getting into the weeds of it. But Giroud's an interesting one. I'm just concerned that he'll be incredibly boring.
Do you think he's going to be boring?
Yeah. I don't know why. I just feel like he might not make for a great pundit. So I think I'll be tuning into ITV, to be honest. I'll have a look.
Yeah.
I'll have a look.
We'll have a look.
At the first broadcast.
Yeah.
But if I'm not having him... I'll be going to IDP.
Cutthroat stuff. I'm disappointed there's no like rogue European kind of that has no connection to Ireland at all on RTE. That was what they were known for doing. Yeah. That was Didi. Did Nobby Solano do one a while ago? I remember they had Hope Solo. Do you remember Hope Solo, the American goalkeeper? She did it. She wasn't on it for a while. She just did a World Cup. That was it.
They brought her in
for the World Cup, like randomly. No connection.
Was it the World Cup or the Women's World Cup?
Maybe it was the Women's World Cup, but it's the same point though. It's like, you know, it's this person who's nothing to do with Ireland who's coming in to talk about the World Cup, you know. I like that.
It's a bit of expertise, like, yeah.
Maybe it wasn't Nobby Solano, but there was someone as well they had maybe back in 2002 or so, 2006, maybe, I don't know.
Dermot Keenan says Keith Tracy jumping ship from Virgin to RTE. Yop Westmeath says Brian Kerr too. You want lads saying it as it is and aren't afraid to. It's all scripted nonsense now on RTE. Michael Mooney, Giroud is boring. Was on Monday Night Football earlier this season. He was terrible.
And there's some
maybe
people
if he's talking about France, maybe he comes out of the shell.
Like Monday Night Football is very. It's a different setup to what the World Cup is going to be. It's 10, 15 minutes here or there. Tell us what you want and what you're thinking and tip off. It's not talking about yourself too much. You know, some people can revel in that.
Monday Night Football is like the football brains place. You want to have a deep level of football interest and football knowledge to go on Monday Night Football and hold your own with Gary Neville. And
Giroud's over in America at the minute, is he? Or is he with Lille?
I don't know.
He was doing all right.
No, he's back in France.
He's with Lille, was it Lille, I think,
So it is.
He should have
just gone.
Sorry, he should have brought Martin O'Neill in for RT. Or one of them should have taken him.
He'll probably be on TalkSport.
True enough. TalkSport have got some mad stuff as well. I can't think off the top of my head. I remember reading it going, this is wild.
Of course, Off the Ball will have plenty of coverage across the World Cup. Yeah. We'll be chatting about the World Cup with Simon Cooper tomorrow, actually. Yeah. It's just gone 8:15 here on Off the Ball Breakfast. We will be joined later on by John Dobbo Dobson. Yes. Someone you know well, Dara?
You're
in town this week?
No, well, I've never actually met him. But I know him well through text, for sure. He's been on the show plenty of times. He was in studio, I'm going to say like a year and a half ago, just before a bunch of the new rules got introduced into rugby. And very much looking forward to chatting to him. They're obviously playing they're playing Leinster this weekend, the Aviva Stadium, so they're in town for the week.
Absolutely. And just before we finish up with the papers, so back of the Examiner here, we've got Ben O'Connor clarifies work rate remarks. So the Cork manager talking about his comments. He previously noted that some of the previous teams were nice hurlers without working too hard, where he actually he's clarified that now ahead of the Munster final this weekend to say that I didn't actually mean it that way. You know, he got a few pelters to say that it was insulting to previous teams, but he actually just said, look, I'm more aware of what they put in now, and I just want my team to work hard. We'll be chatting to Jimmy Barry Murphy and Shane Dowling a little later on the show about that as well. Are we looking forward to the Munster final?
Absolutely, always, as always. I'm really looking forward to the Leinster final as well, not to move away from the Munster final. I mean, of course, we're going to have Jimmy Barry Murphy on later on, as well as Shane Dowling, and there was a great piece on the evening show last night with Seamus Flanagan, of course, who's on with us a lot, as well as Pat Ryan. Great to hear from Pat Ryan, just seems like the loveliest bloke in GAA, and has some great insight, of course, too. So always looking forward to it, always a great occasion, takes over the city and all that sort of stuff.